This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Flash Fulbright.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. And our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR. We're going to start out talking baseball, MSU baseball. Baseball team won the third game of a three-game series with Ohio State yesterday. So on our lines is Jake Boss Jr., and we'll talk about the baseball team. And Jake, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Earl. How are you?
Okay, doing good. It was a pleasure to be out there and saw that two out of three wins, the second of two out of three wins. How does that set you up now? When you look at the Big Ten race, I know it's early, but which team do you see as the favorite to give you some battle you for the Big Ten crown this year?
Well, you're right, Earl. It is early, but it's a good league, you know, from top to bottom, and there's a lot of very good programs in our conference. Purdue is off to a great start this year. Minnesota is off to a great start as well, and Illinois is always going to be good. And I don't think we've heard the last from Ohio State either. And so, there are probably five, six, seven teams, you know, right now that have a realistic shot at winning it. And it's going to make for an interesting conference championship race down the stretch.
Now, I know a lot of teams in the Big Ten, I think I'm right, if just about all the teams almost have gotten new facilities. Is that right? All the teams seem to be upgrading their baseball programs.
Well, many of us have upgraded our facilities, yeah. And, it's good for our conference, on a national level to be able to play and upgrade your facilities and really attract some top-level recruits. And so, we've done that, obviously. Purdue and Indiana are in the process of doing that right now, and there have been some renovations to Michigan and a few others in the past. And so it's there's no doubt it's good for our conference.
Now, do you play every team? Most sports that we don't have, round robin play. How many teams do you play in baseball? Will you play every team in baseball?
No, we will not play every team. We have eight conference weekends, and we do not. There are only 11 teams in baseball in the Big Ten. Wisconsin does not have a baseball team.
Oh, yeah.
So for us, we missed this year Nebraska and Northwestern. So we'll play eight conference weekends, and I think the last conference weekend is the third weekend in May, I believe.
Okay, so that's pretty good. You play both teams. I know only eight teams get into the conference playoffs. Do you like that, or do you think that every team should be in?
Well, right now, actually, Earl, it's only six teams.
That six
get
teams
into the,
in
to the conference tournament. Yeah, I would prefer to see that move up to eight. For us, it's you have weather issues that you sometimes deal with in baseball with rain, and if you have more than eight teams in it, then if you get rained out, it's going to be tough to get all the games in the tournament, because we do have a deadline that we need to similar to basketball that we need to complete. That tournament on a Sunday before the selection show, the NCAA tournament. And so, people are concerned about that, and I'd like to see it go up to eight teams, so I think it would be better for our conference to do that.
Yes, a matter of fact, I almost started to ask you about the weather factor last night. When you look at the weather factor and having such good weather so early, how does that change the dynamic, if it changes the dynamic at all? I would assume it probably has some aspect on the dynamic of the games.
Well, it does. When we had such good weather early, we were able to get outside and practice outside, and, it really kind of prepared us a little bit better for, the beginning of our season. Our season starts early in the middle of February with games, and most years we don't have a chance to get outside and see ball off the bat until the day before our first game when we practice. And so, this year it was good that we were able to get out before that and see some live balls off the bat and get ourselves ready. Now we're kind of in the middle of the season right now, and we feel like we're at a pretty good point where we are prepared to do that. So it's a matter of now maybe playing through some cooler weather, but, you know, that's okay as long as there's no snow on the ground.
Yes, and does this having this extra good weather now, and that help the team? I would assume it helps the team as far as their fielding practice, getting outside and fielding balls and ground balls and fly balls. Does that have a bigger impact on the game?
Yeah, you know, I think it does. It's good. You know, the warmer it is, obviously, it's easier to play in warmer weather. And you know, it can be difficult when it's when the temperature is in the, you know, upper 30s or low 40s. You know, it's not really easy for anybody. And our guys are mentally pretty tough. And you know, we recruit primarily from the Midwest, and so guys are used to playing in this type of weather in the first part of the season. So it's typically not a problem, but. You know, it's easier on your body when it is warmer. There's no doubt about that.
Now, I know this is you started new, I think it was last year and then this year. How's it gone with the three-game stretches? I used to play doubleheaders all the time, and now you've gone to three games. How is that working out?
Well, I like the three-game series, Earl. You know, I think it's done a couple different things. It's really kind of jammed the pack up, you know, as far as the Big Ten race the last couple years. And it's really kind of it makes it a little bit tougher to separate yourself from you know, from schools, which, you know, gives a lot of people it makes for an exciting, you know, run down for the last 2-3 weekends. You know, when you're playing a 4-game series, you know, you either win the series by 2 games or 3 games or you know, you split the series, and you know, if you split the series, it's 2-2, and there's no real, you know, winner or loser. Makes it a little bit more difficult for a tiebreaker. And so the 3-game series, you always have somebody that wins the series and has the tiebreaker, and, you know, makes it a little easier at the end of the year.
Yes, and what about, you know, the 9 conference games you play? I assume that those are a lot more to give all the other players, if they don't get a chance to play during the other series, they get a chance to play in the 9 conference games.
Well, to a certain degree, I think, Earl, you know, it's bigger for our pitching. It really you know, allows us to throw a lot more guys and get a deeper feel for our bullpen and who can actually come in and be successful for us. And so, you know, the position guys, we'll give a couple of guys, you know, a day off, you know, here and there to keep them fresh. But those are really important games for us to win in those non-conference games, because we try to get an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament.
Yes, now, how many games do you think you'll need to win to get an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament? Around 35?
Well, you know, Earl, for a northern school, you really need to get close to 40 wins, you know, to get an at-large bid. And that's not easy to do, obviously. We finished with 36 wins last year and felt really good about our ball club, and that we could compete with anybody in the country. But at the same time, we weren't able to get that 40th win and get ourselves in. And so it seems to be the benchmark the last few years is 40.
Yes, and that's I know we've talked about it in the past, how the Big Ten is looked at when you start looking at getting teams into the NCAA, and only one Big Ten team, sometimes two, are getting in now. Last year was only one. Do you see that ever changing, where Big Ten could get at least two teams in, or they'll consider at least two teams or even three teams in the Big Ten?
Well, I certainly hope so. You know, I think, 3 years ago we got three teams in, and, you know, that was good for our league. At the same time, I think there are a lot of times at the end of the year where the Big Ten doesn't really get a fair rap. And you know, it's kind of looked down upon that our conference is not a very competitive conference. And if you look at the winners of our conference the last couple of years and the teams that have been in the NCAA tournament, each one of them has had a lot of success and getting to regional finals and knocking off some of the so-called power conference teams. You know, and so we represent ourselves very well in the NCAA tournament. You would hope that would help open some eyes up at the end of the year when they hand those bids out.
Yes, you would like to think that, yes, because, you know, us here in the Midwest, we always are looking for the Midwest teams to get a little bump there or get something, but it just seems like we don't have the respect that the other conferences do. Would you think that that's it, or just the way it works out?
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that, Earl, you know, and it's too bad that it has to be that way. You know, we've always talked about you know, when we talk about who we play, we'll play anybody, anywhere, and we feel like we have a really good chance at the end of the year you know, to play some of those schools down south. At the beginning of the year, it's a little difficult, you know, because of the fact that we practice inside and the weather is what it is, and you know, it makes it a little more challenging. And so, where we might struggle against somebody early in the year, you know, I have a fairly good feeling about what we could do at the end of the year against that same school.
Hey, is there any chance that you can get some of those schools in the South to come up here and play home games during the middle of the season or during some part of the season, or is that just about null and void?
Well, we're trying to do some things to get some schools up here from, you know, from some Southern conferences. And, you know, you look at missed class time, and that's certainly a concern. And,
yeah,
and it's going to typically have to be in May when the weather's, you know, good and school is out. And so, you know, we're doing some things where we can try to get some schools up, and, you know, hopefully we'll be able to do that in the next couple of years.
Yeah, let's hope so, because that would certainly help the Big Ten, help you out, and help all the teams out if you can get some of those teams to come up here and schedule some games. Because I got a feeling a lot of them probably won't want to come up here to do some games just because of the conference and the factor. And I know that they don't mind you coming down there during February and March. You get some of those games down there. Oh, they're welcome you. But, yeah, if you want them to return the favor, it seems like they're a little hesitant to do that.
Well, yeah, you know, sometimes they are. And, they, you know, there are a lot of schools that really don't travel that much and don't play too many road games. And, you know, a few of those schools were left out of the NCAA tournament last year because of that fact, even though they were from some power conferences down south, and I think that was kind of an eye opener for a lot of schools, and there could be a chance to get, you know, some of those schools that would be willing to go travel a little bit because of, you know, what that looks like to the NCAA, and, you know, when you play all your games at home, I think the committee started to take that into consideration, so hopefully that will help things out.
Oh, that's good. Hopefully they will. Hopefully we'll see a little bit more evening out in baseball. When you look at your team and you look at the Big Ten, that is, how do you see the other teams, you know, that you mentioned already, I would assume you're going to say those are probably some of the favorites to win the Big Ten this year.
Yeah, you know, as I said, Earl, Purdue is off to a really hot start. They've got really all their position guys back and a couple of their arms back, including their closer. And it's a veteran ball club that has been playing for a long time. And they haven't really had to insert many new guys into their lineup from last year's team, which is pretty good. And so, you know, they're playing real well right now. As I said, Minnesota always seems to pitch real well and play good defense, and you know, they're a staple at the top of the conference, you know, year in and year out. And Illinois is coming off a successful NCAA tournament run last year, and they lost some key components. But, you know, they've got a lot of experience as well, and they've got some guys that are coming back. And, you know, Nebraska, nobody really knows a whole lot about what to expect from Nebraska coming from the Big 12 into the Big 10 now. And it'll be interesting to see how they adapt into the conference and where they finish this year. But, you know, as I said, it's a very deep conference. There's a lot of talent here, and there are a lot of teams that could win it.
What's the strength of your team? What's the strength of the Spartans this year?
Well, right now we pitch it really well. You know, we're at the top of just about every category in the Big Ten in pitching, from earned run average to opponent's batting average and on down the list. And so I think it's you know, we really pitch it well. We're playing pretty good defense, and you know, offensively we give ourselves a chance. You know, we're not quite where we think we should be offensively just yet, and a lot of that is maybe because we do have some young guys that are getting their feet wet in college baseball. But you know, those guys can just stay the course and you know, just try to execute the plan. I think we got a chance to be okay.
Now, before we let you go, what's the difference you see when guys coming from high school, they start playing in college? What's the biggest thing they have to adjust to?
Well, you know, I think as far as pitchers are concerned, you know, there may be a bit of a smaller strike zone, and now they're dealing with hitters that can, you know, that are going to hit mistakes, you know, and they have to be a little bit more fine. They have to be a little bit you know, more careful, because when they miss with a pitch and they miss over the plate, it's going to get hit pretty hard. And you know, I think offensively, you know, young hitters need to realize that breaking balls are better at this level. The ball is thrown harder. The breaking ball is thrown harder at this level. And, you know, everything is a little more, bit more sharp and crisp. And the speed of the game is just, you know, that much faster. And so sometimes it takes a little while to adjust the speed of that game.
Yes. Is that part of it, of the guys being better or getting better in the field per se, getting better, getting the balls quicker and things like that?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. You know, there are a lot of plays that, you know, that we think that should be routine plays. And sometimes with a freshman, you know, they don't maybe expect themselves to make, you know, that type of play. And then, you know, then when they realize and they're able to get caught up to the speed of the game, you know, a lot of those plays do become routine.
Okay. Hey, Jake, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And, you know, we'll have you back on again and talk some more baseball with you. You know, we love to talk baseball. The next time, we'll probably try to talk a little bit of Tigers with you. Not too much, but we'll throw in a little Tigers, a few questions on them.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Earl.
Hey, thanks, Jake. Yep. Bye-bye. Okay. And that's Jake Boss Jr., the head coach of Michigan State University's baseball team. The time is 21 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
If you've ever stood in your local Megamart, pulled out your smartphone and double-checked Amazon against the price in front of you, you know it's true. These days, customers are experts on what things cost, and that's made brick-and-mortar retailers reconsider pricing strategies. I'm Neil Conan, buyers and sellers and the balance of power in retail. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon, I'm Kevin Lavery. Mostly cloudy skies today, a good chance for showers and thunderstorms, and we'll see a high of 64. Then partly cloudy tonight with a continuing chance of showers and thunderstorms, then some patchy frost developing overnight, a low in the mid-30s. Sunny skies on Wednesday, highs in the upper 50s, sunny again on Thursday with a high around 50.
And we're going to talk about the women's basketball game tonight with Chris Solari of the Lansing State Journal, 355-9527, toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. We'll talk about the game between Notre Dame and Baylor tonight with Chris Solari. But first, we got to tell you that last night, Derek Nix was suspended from the basketball team. He was arrested for possession of marijuana, and so he's been suspended indefinitely from the basketball team. Tom Izzo, of course, he's in the Final Four, but he heard about it, and he's suspended him indefinitely right now. Right now, let's go to the phones and check in with Chris Solari. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, pretty good. It's obviously a busy day today hearing that that Derek Nix story. Tough situation, especially for a guy that's being counted on to be a leader and a possible captain for that team next year. It's real tough to hear that today.
Yeah, it is. It's unfortunate, but as we know, those things happen. Young people do make mistakes.
That is true.
Yep. Well, let's see. We got the Baylor Notre Dame game, and I tell you, when I was watching the game the other night, Chris, I was really—it really disturbed me. I should say, surprised me somewhat. Baylor's Brittany Griner, she was really fighting for a position a lot of times, and a lot of times her teammates didn't throw her the ball. I mean, she should have had, I thought, way more shots than what she had, and they probably should have won that game by 15 to 20 points, but they just never went to her. I saw many possessions where their guards would just drive on in and take the shot themselves, just ignoring Brittany. And I see if the team continues to do that, and they've got such a talent on their team, and they continue to ignore her, they might get beat tonight.
Well, see, I'm kind of the other belief here, because I thought the two teams that would give them the most trouble were both Stanford and UConn.
Yeah,
they Stanford has a little bit more of a post presence with the Okwuegbe girl. They got two sisters, the Okwuegbe girls. But the one, Nedeme, is an All-American. And Stanford has a little bit bigger of a team. So, I mean, they're a little bit more disruptive. And obviously, Baylor's got some talented players around Brittany Griner to be able to survive that. And the same with UConn. UConn gave them a really good game early in the year. I think it was a five-point game that Baylor pulled out down in Waco. And they've got, you know, with the Dolson girl and Hartley and some of the taller players they have, they match up a little better. Notre Dame, I don't know if Notre Dame matches up as well as those other two teams.
Yes, that might be it, you know, but, you know, I guess that just caught me by surprise that they didn't go to, I mean, she really worked hard establishing her position, and yet they just seemed not to go to her, or either, I don't know if you'd say they ignored her, and maybe they did, but I just thought that her teammates definitely did her a disservice.
Well, I think that early in the year they went to her so often and so much that they've actually rounded into a better team. You know, not just Brittany Griner and a bunch of other girls. They've done a good job of getting some complimentary players. I mean, obviously Sims has been there all year, but you know, the Condry girl stepped up and hit some big shots in that game. I think that now you're actually seeing them become more than just Brittany Griner too. But you're right, she does work hard for position, and you know, it's funny because the last couple years you've seen the growth and development of Brittany Griner, and it's amazing how similar early in her career she was being treated like Alyssa DeHaan was here at Michigan State. I mean, she was thrown around like a rag doll at times. The difference was that in her freshman year she responded by punching a girl, which you don't ever encourage violence, but a lot of the mistreatment that Alyssa went through for 4 years, she settled that in that one instant by doing that, and you see people actually playing her like a basketball player rather than like a rag doll.
Okay. Well, we got a caller for you, Chris. Hello, you're on the air with Chris Solari. Hello, you got a question?
Hello.
Yes. I guess we lost him there. So
I frighten people that way. What can I say?
Well, another call's come in, but we'll talk some more about this game. This should be. So, what do you think about this matchup between Notre Dame and Baylor tonight?
Well, I think they're a little bit contrasting styles. You know, Notre Dame's very guard heavy, and their guard presence is really what drives them with Skylar Diggins and Brittany Mallory and. You know, Natalie knows that we saw him here a couple of years ago, and it's more of a traditional, almost Big Ten like type team where you got a little more athleticism on the wings and than you do traditional post presence right now. I think that Baylor they're just on a roll and they're on such a mission right now. I don't think they could be stopped. And you know, I mean, you don't like to say that they're rallying around Kim Mulkey because they've been, you know, there all year, but, you know, her situation with the Bell's palsy coming on and dealing with that, that's added a new dimension, and I think that kind of kept them a little bit focused in terms of dealing with things on the court. And it's amazing because you look at that team, there's two All-Americans on that team. When anytime you have two All-Americans on your team, you're probably going to be one of those teams that sits right there at the end. And, I mean, you look at the Final Four, I think there was something like 6 of 10 All-Americans were in the Final Four. I mean, that's women's basketball right there. You know, if you get the star quality athletes, chances are you're gonna make a nice deep run in the tournament.
Yes, and that's the thing. You need the stars on your team. What does this say? What's your opinion? What does this do for women's basketball? You have a big star like Brittany Griner, 6'8", such a large wingspan. What does this do for the game for women's basketball, or will it just be, you know, just a little knock on the game? You know, maybe not. We won't see anything effectively coming out of this.
Well, I think it's an aberration. I mean, she's literally a once in a generation player. I mean, you know, very similar to how you saw, you know, 30 years ago with Cheryl Miller. Will she redefine the game? I'm not really sure. I mean, you know, you don't have a lot of 6'8 girls with that type of ability. You really don't. I mean, I think that the one thing that I have seen is that it's changed the way opponents attack big players. You know, and again, like I said, it dovetails off of how a lot of the way that they dealt with Alyssa DeHaan here is, from a strategic standpoint, try and pull her away from the rim and try and pull her away from the paint and let him let your other players create around that and go to the basket while she's far away from the rim. She's obviously proven to be a better player than that. And then, again, the physical side of it, the physical play is something that I think that is really one of those things that the women's game is starting to see more and more of, and especially with the Brittany Griner situation. So I think, like I said, I think it's just an aberration with the skill set that Brittany Griner brings. So I don't think we'll see too many people in the women's game dunking like she does, or having such an impact on a game. I mean, the way that Anthony Davis played last night for Kentucky is incredibly similar to Brittany Griner's presence in the women's game.
Okay, well, I got a caller for you from Dave from Kalamazoo. Dave, how you doing?
Well, good. I guess my question is, other than the eight, nine usual suspects that you have in women's basketball, you always seem to have UConn, Stanford, Notre Dame has moved their way up. Tennessee is, a little bit flagging, probably directly as a result of what their coaching situation is right now. Duke, Maryland, North Carolina, Texas seems to have a little bit of a bump right now, but Texas is a darn chock full of football players that, Baylor's doing pretty well with it. I guess my question is, what does it say about the Big Ten? And really, Michigan State may have been able to have a big presence in the middle too, but haven't been able to keep the knees healthy on Madison. Yeah. So that's been a big deficit that Susie Merchant's had to work around. But I mean, the Big Ten in general, what does that say? Because they never, with the exception of that one year, a couple of years there, they just seem to be like on the outside looking in, and that, maybe 12 through 16, 12 through 24. But when it comes up to those regional finals, regional semis, it often isn't a game. And I'll hang up and take my answer off the line.
Yeah.
Okay.
I kind of touched on that this week when I did my season wrap-up for the women's game. The Big Ten has been struggling to get the top-flight players. I think in this year's top 100, I believe the Big Ten's only getting three players, and two of them are coming to Michigan State. Last year they had a pretty good recruiting haul in terms of getting some of the point guards. But it's amazing to me how the Big Ten has really, like I said, struggled to get the top recruits, but struggled to get top big players. And it's turned into the last maybe 3 or 4 years become a more guard-oriented league, especially with the graduation of both Gentile Lavender in the last couple of years at Ohio State, and then Tammy Jeske at Northwestern, and Alyssa DeHaan. And I think this year was a guard league. It was definitely a guard league when you have the Alex Bentleys and the Maggie Lucases and the girls at Iowa that they've had. And Samantha Perhalis. So it's going to be interesting to see next year what happens in terms of just the style of play in the league and the change in facet. I think Michigan State's in a very good position because one thing that Susie has done is recruit those big girls. I mean, if Madison Williams can't stay on the court, like Jay said, that turns into a shot-blocking presence and an offensive presence that not many teams have, especially at 6'7". And then, you add in some of the lengthy wing players they have. I think Rebecca Mills, I think that Jasmine Hines, right there, if you use those three players alone, I think Michigan State gets a little more front court depth than most any other team in the Big Ten when you come back next year.
And another thing is, Chris, boy, it looks like in the Big Ten especially, it looks like they're a turnover machine or a turnover waiting to happen. I mean, look, it just looks like the girls can't handle the ball that well. I mean, you just see turnover after turnover after turnover.
Wow, you've been listening to Tim a little bit too long, Earl.
Yes.
The thing that you have to really grasp, and this is kind of the apples and oranges difference between men's and women's basketball, is there are going to be missed layups, and there are going to be a lot more missed layups because the game's played below the rim, and there's going to be a lot more turnovers. I think when you look at the national average
around that was about 17, 18 turnovers a game for some of your top teams. And, you know, even teams like UConn turn the ball over a good amount just because of the style of play. And it's just a different game. I mean, it can be frustrating and maddening to watch if you look at it from a men's versus women's perspective sometimes. But if you're able to really divorce yourself from making that comparison, I think you kind of see it a little bit differently. But you're right. I mean, you know, Michigan State at times has turned the ball over an incredible amount. And it's situational turnovers that really are what kill you in women's basketball more so than the total amount.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, we got another caller for you. We got Michael on the line. Michael, how you doing?
How you doing there? I'm glad you're talking about women's basketball because I noticed all these teams are number one seeds that's playing for the championship. It's like when I look at the men's tournament too, they had a lot of 1-2 seeds playing for the get to the Final Four, and you had a 4 and a 7, Louisville, and I just want to know the guys who pick the teams for the tournaments. They do a great job, but what I want to know is in women's basketball, I just worry about the talent level because the dominant teams are so dominant. You have the usual suspects like Connecticut, Tennessee, now Notre Dame or Baylor, but in NCAA player, you have teams like Kentucky or Kansas or Duke or North Carolina. And I just want to know, they always talk about the men on the men's side that the one-and-done players and everything. I just want to know why in basketball in general, why can't they find a way or the feeder systems that feed into it like the AAU and the high school coach, that education will really mean something to the kids. Maybe these heads of the NCAA need to listen more to the players. I just want you to comment on that. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Well, from the women's standpoint, I mean, it's kind of a slow-moving process, and I think, you do see this year that, your final eight teams are all 1 and 2 seeds, and your final four seeds are all 1 seeds. And there is that disparity of talent between maybe the top two dozen programs and the rest of college basketball. But at the same time, you also have to kind of think, the women's game is a good 30 or 40 years behind where the men's game is. I mean, 1982 was the first NCAA women's tournament. So, I mean, that says something right there. I mean, it was the AIWA before that. So if you take that into account and think back to, the halcyon days of men's college basketball, you had the same programs up there. And it's really, in all honesty, in that 30 years, it's diversified a lot. And I think you're starting to see, especially when you look at a team like Delaware, able to keep a girl like Elaine Deladon at home, and Michigan State starting to creep up in there, and Ohio State starting to creep up in there. I mean, you're your blue bloods in women's basketball, the UConns, the Tennessees, the Dukes, those programs that are generally there year in, year out, they're starting to get more competition. The Baylors of the world are coming around. They weren't there at one point. Your Louisiana Techs and Old Dominions that were past powerhouses are starting to be surpassed a little bit. Which when you were a smaller school back in the day, you could throw a little money towards the women's program and make a major impact. Where now you really have to, like the men's program, like football, you have to compete with the major powerhouse schools because they're all throwing money at coaches and recruiting budgets and getting out there and making their presence known. So I think from that standpoint, women's basketball is growing. It's not where it needs to be yet. And all you have to do is go look at the ESPNU Hoop Girls Top 100 and look at about the top 15 to 20 players, and they're all going to those schools. It's a slow moving process, but it is heading in the right direction.
Okay. Hey, Chris, I want to thank you for being with me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we'll definitely have to have you back on again and talk some more women's basketball with you.
Yeah, for sure. And baseball season's coming up, so we're all gearing up for opening day. So,
okie dokie.
All right, take care of yourself,
bro. Okay, we'll talk to you later, Chris.
Yep. All right, bye-bye.
And that's Chris Solari from the Lansing State Journal. The time, 40 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
A hooded sweatshirt, a box of Skittles, an unarmed boy shot and killed in a gated community in Florida. That much we know. In the torrent of media coverage that's followed Trayvon Martin's death, misinformation, writes David Carr in the New York Times, is flourishing. I'm Neil Conan, traditional media, social media, and Trayvon Martin. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
For the rest of the day today, look for mostly cloudy skies and a good chance of showers and thunderstorms with a high of 64. Partly cloudy tonight with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening, then some patchy frost overnight, a low in the mid-30s. Sunny skies for Wednesday, highs in the upper 50s. Sunny and a bit cooler on Thursday with a high around 50 degrees.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. And now let's review the last night's game between Kentucky and Kansas, and look ahead to some of the other games, and look ahead maybe even to next year with our good friend Drew Sharp and from the Detroit Free Press, and talk with him about the basketball game last night. Drew, how you doing, my man?
Doing pretty good. Just following up on this story right now with MSU.
Yes, you saw that when Derek Nix suspended indefinitely by Coach Izzo, for having some marijuana in his possession.
Now, was Mikel LeSure in the car with him at the same time?
I don't think so.
Okay, you know.
Oh, yeah, LeSure, that's another one who's got in trouble with the Lions. So it's funny how we look at them, we look at them differently when they get to the pros. When they're in college, we look at them totally differently than we do when they get to the pro game.
Well, no, I mean, I think we look at them the same. You know, in a high-profile program like this, you're under the microscope, and these guys keep screwing up. You know, they're going to get themselves in more and more trouble. But on to the last night's game, though. You say, I'm not sure how much of the game you watched. I looked at it periodically.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I'm wondering if some of our listeners did that as well, because we turned in and watched it for a while and saw, I saw when the game, I kept turning over it, and the game was still 10 points or more, so then I turned to watch something else.
It just showed, I think, what we've talked about before. Mm-hmm. It really is true. College basketball, we watch the NCAA tournament for close games. We don't watch for good quality, a high quality level of basketball. If the games aren't close, we flip the dial. It doesn't matter who's playing.
Right, that's right.
We flip the dial. That's what the NCAA tournament has become. And, Kentucky is a deserving champion. That was an excellent, excellent team. Well, there's no question about that. But I think, if the games aren't compelling, if they aren't close, there's no interest, no matter what the names are on the front of the jersey. If the games aren't tight, there's no interest.
Yeah, that's certainly true, and it's a shame, but the game is getting that way, and it's almost like, you're right, because I know when I'm watching some games, if it can be two good teams, it might be two good NBA teams, but if one is blowing out the other, I hardly watch that at all. I just turn the channel and then turn back later on and take a peek at it.
Well, it's different in the NBA because if it's a best-of-seven series, you let the whole series play itself out. There are going to be some blowouts there, here and there, but you generally let the games play themselves out over the course of a series. But in the NCAA, it's all about that one game, that one matchup. And that game is not close. You can't say, well, okay, they got the first one, we'll watch game two, in a couple of days.
Yeah.
If that one game is not close, there's no telling how fast people will flip dials to watch something else. And I'm not saying it's a problem that the NCAA has, but for the second straight year, I'll be curious to see what the ratings are for the final. Like last year, that UConn-Butler game is one of the worst games imaginable.
Yes.
This game, again, Kentucky's a good champion and all that, but because there was nothing really close about it, I'll be curious to see how the ratings are.
Yes, because you had two of the best teams in college basketball. If college basketball tradition, you've got two of the teams that have a great tradition and records and have won multiple championships. You wonder if that has a factor. It seems like that stuff has more of a factor in football than it does in basketball.
Multiple champions, you're
yes.
saying?
You know, that they bring multiple championships to the table. And football, that seems to carry more weight than it does in basketball.
Yeah, basketball, because basketball, again, there are so many equalizers in a basketball game with a three-point shot and everything that, you know, the name of recognition really doesn't mean all that much from the standpoint that all people are interested in watching the NCAA tournament game, is it going to be close? Is it going to be, you know, is a game going to be, you know, whoever's ahead be no more than 2 or 3 points in the last 3 minutes of the game? If you have that, it doesn't matter who's playing. People are going to watch because that's what we've associated with the NCAA tournament.
Yes. When you look in your crystal ball, what do you see coming up in the future for basketball? I mean, you look at this Anthony Davis. Is he just an aberration, or is you know, do we need more guys like that? Or, you know, the way that Kentucky plays the game with all their one and done players, do you see more teams like doing that? I mean, we know some teams like to build a team, but that's not the way right. to do it in college basketball.
Well,
anymore.
No, it's the way to do it. I think. Kentucky winning with its 4 or 5 freshmen this year is a one-year aberration because of the players that they got. Anthony Davis, you and I talked about this before the show, is just a freak. He's one of these athletes who doesn't come around every year. You know, you saw last night how he can dominate a game even without scoring a point. Guys like that are rare indeed. And when he plays in the NBA, you know, he's that type of player, I think, who can make that type of a positive you can have that type of positive effect on his team. But if you're telling me that the 6'10", 6'11 freshmen, high school seniors now are looking at him and say, hey, this is the way I'm going to play next year, forget it. They're going to go their own way because as freshmen, you go to certain programs, you know, you can call the shots. So Kentucky was very fortunate that they got the right one-and-done guys this year who – played under a team concept, and it worked fine for them. But, you know, they'll blow these guys out, bring in 4 more McDonald's All-Americans, and, you know, it probably won't have the same effect. You know, it all depends on what type of players you're getting. If these guys want to play a team concept, you might have a chance. But for the most part, you know, you bring in 18-year-old freshmen, they're going to want to be the show because they figure, I'm only in for 1 year. I want to prove my chances of being a top 3 NBA pick.
But what does that say about the sport, about the game that we watch all the time? What does that say about the sport in general?
Well, what it says about the sport is that, and again, the NCAA did not make this rule. The NBA made this rule with the owners of the Players Association, having the 19-year-old draft eligibility. Now, we've talked about this. A number of coaches have talked about this, and the media has addressed this, that, you know, what the NBA needs to do with the NCAA's cooperation is to have a policy in place that's similar to what you have in Major League Baseball. You're 18 years old, you're out of high school. If you want to sign a professional contract, go ahead. But if you sign a collegiate letter of intent, you're committed for 3 years. I think that's the only way you can make this work, where it's as fair for everybody involved. It's fair for the 18-year-old because if he wants to try to go pro, he can. He can. And it's also fair for the programs and the coaches of these programs, and also I think for the NBA as well, is that those guys who do, you know, decide to play college ball have to play for 3 years. Because I think, by and large, you'll get a better collegiate player coming into the NBA if he's allowed to play at a good program for 3 years.
Yes, unfortunately, some might want to opt out and go play overseas. You know, they'll
yeah,
still have that option.
That's a prerogative as well. But, mm-hmm. I mean, that would mean changing – No, it's an 18 or 20 rule is what it is. You can enter the draft at 18, but if you don't, you have to wait until you're 21. You know, something like that. That's how you can phrase it. And again, it's not denying anyone the opportunity because you can choose to leave at 18. You don't have to go to college. You can go to pros at 18 if someone drafts you. If your game is at that level and someone can draft you, but if not, then you have to agree. Okay, I can't get in at 18. I'll have to wait till I'm 20 or 21, and I would be best served by playing at a good college program for 3 years.
You know, Drew, we've talked about this before, but so many kids mess up on they think they're draft eligible, think they're ready for the draft, and they're not.
Of course, that's, you know, because they're listening to family, friends, AAU coaches, hangers-on, to tell them, look, you're the guy. I mean, how many high school seniors that are being told today, you're better than Anthony Davis. You're better than Anthony Davis. You're better than the Michael Kidd, Gilchrist. You're better than those guys. You know, and they have that inflated sense of self-importance. I mean, and the media is responsible for that. Fans are responsible for that. They said their families are responsible for that. And, again, like I said, you're going to have a lot of guys thinking that they are just as good, if not better, than those the freshmen you saw for Kentucky. And it's going to be a rude awakening for a lot of those guys.
Yeah, that will be, because it's a shame. A lot of them think like that. And, of course, now we're talking about the guys who are think they're good enough to go pro. We see a lot of them think they're good enough to go as a freshman or after their 1 year. They probably really need to go 2 or 3 years, and they go up after one, and then we see a lot of guys struggling, or they're playing in the minor leagues, in the D league, as you say, for 2 or 3 years, trying to get to the NBA level.
Right. Yeah. A lot of these guys who think they're going to get drafted don't get drafted, and then you wind up screwed. The whole idea is that some people say, well, they should be able to go back and play college ball then. So no, you made your choice. You're free to make a choice. If you make the wrong choice, live with that decision. It's very simple. But I do think at some point there's going to have to be some type of moderation of this rule, because the 19-year-old draft eligibility, it doesn't help the NBA. It really doesn't.
It
doesn't help the college game as well, because a lot of these freshmen, if they choose to, not saying they all do, but if they choose to, all they have to do is just stay eligible for that first semester. That's all they have to do. It doesn't matter what. They don't have to attend a class during the basketball season. They choose not to, because they're going to be gone anyway. By the time they flunk out, they're already declared for the NBA draft.
Yep.
And there are far more players, I'm sure. There are far more players than there are who don't, who probably take that approach. All I have to do is just do the bare minimum to stay eligible that first semester, then I'm done.
Yeah, that's for sure. A lot of them take that chance to do what they feel, because a lot of them, that's the thing, Drew. The other thing we've talked about before, a lot of kids will make that decision. They don't really want to go to college and play basketball. They just want to go to college to get closer, to get to the NBA quicker, but it's not because they love the game or they want to get an education. They just want to get to the NBA quicker.
Right. Their education is an NBA education. How can I become... how can I improve my chance of becoming a professional basketball player? That's the occupation they've chosen for themselves, or they desire to be.
Yes.
And you can argue, I mean, the NBA's argument is that they think these players are better off in an NBA practice every day, getting acclimated to that NBA lifestyle at as early an age as possible. They're better off doing that than playing college ball, which, yeah, I disagree with. I think that you still can learn. As great as Kobe Bryant has been, I still think he could have been an even better player if he had played for a year or two at a North Carolina or a Duke or a program like that. I still think it wouldn't have hurt him. It wouldn't have hurt him.
Yeah, didn't hurt Jordan.
Right, but so many of these other guys, though, who came out right after high school and were disasters. And that's the majority of them. That's the majority
yes.
of them. Kobe Bryant... and Kevin Garnett are pretty much the lone exceptions. A lot of these guys, if they succeeded at all, it didn't happen for another 2 or 3 years. And the argument they make is that, well, you know, I got paid for those 2 or 3 years in the NBA as a second-round draft pick, whatever. It's hard to argue against that. But the argument you could make is that if a Monta Ellis, he's big-time contract right now, but had he played college ball for 2 years instead of being in the second round, where, you know, he got paid, you know, say $200,000, whatever. If he had played 2 years at a major program and got better, he would have been a lottery pick. Now, he would have gotten more money up front. Now, again, you know, he's had a fine career. You know, he signed a big-time contract with the Warriors, and now he's with the Bucks. But in stories like that, I do think that if players like that did play for a couple years at a good college program and learned how to be a better basketball player, they could have made a lot more money up front in the draft.
Okay. Hey, Drew, when we talk about this and look at these players and look at the mistakes they make, it seems like it's a revolving door, isn't it? I mean, guys, every year we see guys make mistakes because it's like when we talk about it, and I know when I talk to guys, every guy thinks that they're going to be the one that make it. How dare you step on my dream because I'm going to make it to the league.
Right, and it's a balancing act. You want people to be confident in their abilities. There's nothing you want that. You don't want anyone doubting themselves, but you have to be practical. And that's the only argument I make to these players. It's not like you're trying to be a sports writer or a radio host. I mean, half of 1% of these guys actually make it to play professional sports. Mm-hmm. I don't think they realize that. They think they're going to be the one, and yes. You want them confident. You want them to do their best to try to realize that dream, but you also want them to understand that, you know, it might behoove you to, you know, to work a little harder on some other things, even as a safeguard against, you know, that dream not being realized. But instead, I think people look at it from the argument, well, you know, it's about the NBA or the NCAA taking something away from them. Instead of them realizing that, you know, maybe they're not getting the most out of themselves as they should.
Yeah, that's so true, Drew. I mean, it'd be nice if we could solve this problem. I know we can't, but it would be nice.
I just cover them, you know. I cover them, I criticize them. That's it. You know, I have nothing to do. I wash my hands of the whole thing because, you know, they're going to do, you know, the NCAA and the NBA is going to do what they want to do as long as they keep making cash. So if they're going to be cynical and hypocritical about how they judge things, then you know what? Don't come back at me and blame me for, well, you should be doing more to help these, you know, to help these kids and have them understand what options they have and the risks they take. So, hey, look, they're on their own.
Yeah, that's true. They certainly are, and they'll continue to be on their own. They'll continue to make these mistakes. As you see, even here in every other school, the guys are taking their look at their NBA chances, you know.
Hey, let me ask you quickly one thing, just on the current news thing. Mm-hmm. Nick, do you think he's going to play again for Michigan State?
I know Tom believes in second chances, so I would assume he would. He always gives guys he believes in second chances. So with him believing in second chances the way he does, I would assume that he would he'd get another chance and he would have to walk the straight and narrow if he got a second chance.
See, I would say right now, I would say it's maybe only a 30% chance that he comes back to this team.
Hmm.
I think only like a 30% chance right now because of what was expected of him in this offseason,
yes.
What he had said in that locker room after they lost to Louisville, that, you know, everyone said, oh, he's stepping up now, he's assuming responsibility, and to embarrass not just himself but the program, the way that he did. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if Tom, being Tom, you know, sometimes he flies off the handle and says, look, you're done, you're out of here. Like I said, I know you're right. He likes to give second chances, but it wouldn't surprise me if Derek Nix has played his last game at Michigan State.
Okay, well, we'll find that out in weeks to come. You know that. Hey, Drew, thanks for being with me today. We'll invite you back again sometime, buddy.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye-bye. And that's Drew Sharp talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Stay tuned for more sports talk from Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons, call us up, and talk sports right here on AM 870 WKAR. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Have yourself a very safe and a pleasant evening, and I'll see you tomorrow right here on WKAR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.